From NPR News, this is live coverage of the Michigan and Arizona primaries. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Mitt Romney holds a narrow lead over Rick Santorum in Michigan.
Ballots there are still being counted.
We'll hear why some in Michigan voted for the home state candidate.
Romney, I feel he is conservative enough, but not crazy conservative.
And we'll hear why others cast ballots against him.
He seems mechanical, fake. He just doesn't relate well to people.
Arizona Republicans related well enough to Romney to hand him a victory in their state today. Santorum finished second.
We'll hear from our reporters at both candidates' headquarters.
Results and analysis coming up.
It's special coverage of the Michigan and Arizona primaries from NPR News.
Joining us in the studio is NPR's Ron Elving, our senior Washington editor. Ron, Arizona has gone to Mitt Romney. Michigan remains close, but Romney's still in the lead.
There's been a lot of talk about how Mitt Romney does not look like a strong front runner, and certainly he has not many times during the past month. But what may be happening tonight is we may be seeing Rick Santorum miss a historic opportunity. Because if Rick Santorum remains a few points behind, and he's behind about 4 percentage points with a little less than 2/3 of the vote, a little over 3/5 of the vote in, if he does not overcome that margin, if he lets Mitt Romney escape from Michigan with a victory, even if the delegates are pretty evenly distributed, which it looks like they will be, he has let Mitt Romney get away when he had a very close opportunity to really knock him off his pins going into those big events on Super Tuesday a week from tonight, especially in Ohio.
By way of reference, I should say, 4 years ago, Mitt Romney polled just under 39% of the Michigan primary and winning it. Today he's at 40% right now. He got 338,000 votes there, and it looks like it could be a close-run thing, given what trends are, to see if he will match the total that he had 4 years ago in the Michigan primary when he beat John McCain.
Curiously, the people who were voting for him over John McCain were largely the most conservative voters in Michigan. So at that time, he was the right candidate against McCain, the centrist candidate. Now those roles have been changed. He is now the centrist candidate against Rick Santorum.
Appearing in a different role in a different primary. Melissa?
We're going now to NPR's Ari Shapiro at Mitt Romney headquarters in Novi, Michigan. And Ari, four words, where is Mitt Romney?
We don't know. I've just been talking to some senior staffers, and one of them said, well, when are you guys going to call the race? Another one said, our lead seems to keep widening, so we would be talking soon. But somebody came out and put some comments on the podium. Then Bill Schuette, the Ohio Attorney General, came out and said, in a few minutes we'll hear from someone named Mitt Romney. Well, more than a few minutes have gone by, and we haven't heard from Mitt Romney yet.
But the impression you're getting is that they're preparing to deliver a victory speech in Michigan?
That's the impression that the numbers are suggesting right now. But as everyone knows, things that look one way can turn out to be a very different way just a few minutes or a few hours later. So they're feeling better than they were a little while ago, but he hasn't given a victory speech yet.
And again, this margin is held pretty consistently for the last hour or so, about 3, 4, 5 percentage points ahead of Rick Santorum.
Yeah, that's true. Now we've crossed the 50% threshold of the amount of votes that have come in across the state. So they're feeling more secure as the night goes on. But, you know, it's not over till it's over.
Well, what's the strategy that they've been talking about heading into Super Tuesday and where they go from here?
Well, tomorrow he's going to be in Ohio. Then there's just a quick jag across, actually, my birth town of Fargo, North Dakota, all the way over to Seattle, Washington. He's sort of avoiding, at least for the moment, some of the deep South states where Newt Gingrich has been campaigning really heavily and Ron Paul has been lately. Those are the really more conservative, socially conservative states where Romney has a real struggle, as he did in South Carolina, which he lost by a wide margin to Newt Gingrich. So he's focusing on more of these states that might be swing states in the general election, or that, you know, might even, in the case of Washington, tend to trend blue when it's not a Republican primary.
You know, Ari, we heard a little bit earlier on the program from Congressman Jeff Flake, and when Robert asked him how Mitt Romney should handle his wealth, I think Jeff Flake said, embrace your wealth. You're a rich guy, and don't try to hide it. Do you think that's a winning strategy for Mitt Romney?
Well, he's been trying to do that. He often says, I will never apologize for my success. This is the dream of America, where every person can, you know, my wealth, he says, was made the old-fashioned American way in the private sector through businesses. I think the problem is not just that he's wealthy, but that he seems to have a hard time connecting people on the level of his wealth and talking about money. You know, you look at an extremely wealthy person like New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who never seems to trip up on the fact that he is a bajillionaire, and yet somehow Mitt Romney, who also has a great deal of money, just seems to make comments that strike a wrong note more often than not.
Okay, NPR's Ari Shapiro waiting for Mitt Romney to speak there in Novi, Michigan. Ari, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And back to NPR's Ron Elving. Let's talk a little bit here about Michigan political geography. We don't know of the one-third of the precincts in Michigan that have not yet reported. We've now got about two-thirds in, and there's a 4.40% to 36% lead for Mitt Romney. We don't really know if there's any clear geographical pattern to who's reported and who hasn't reported. But what's the conventional wisdom about where Mitt Romney should be doing well and where Rick Santorum should be doing well?
We would expect Mitt Romney to be doing well in the Detroit area. We would expect him to do well throughout the metropolitan area in the southeastern portion of the state. And to put it very roughly, the further away you go from there, the more trouble he should have. But it's not quite that simple. Yeah. While we would expect it to become more Santorum territory as it becomes more sparsely populated in the sense of density, in other words, all the congressional districts have exactly the same population, but to get to that same population number, the first district has to incorporate much of about a third of the lower peninsula of Michigan and all of the upper, the immense upper peninsula of Michigan. So right now it looks like maybe more, six districts for each and two totally contested.
Ron Elving, thanks.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the Michigan and Arizona Republican primaries. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. By about 4 percentage points, Mitt Romney is retaining his lead over Rick Santorum in Michigan. That's with about two-thirds of the votes having been counted.
NPR has already projected Mitt Romney the winner in Arizona, but in Michigan, where Mitt Romney grew up, the race does remain too close to call.
The stakes in Michigan are high. It's a valuable prize. Plus, a win there could provide Romney or Santorum with momentum heading towards Super Tuesday next week.
We're awaiting speeches from both Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney in Michigan. We're going first to the Attorney General of Michigan, Bill Schuette, the campaign chair in Michigan for Mitt Romney. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Melissa. Good to be with you. Good evening.
And I assume you presume this is a victory tonight there in your state.
Well, it's going to be a big night for Mitt Romney in Michigan and in Arizona. And what that does is it gives us good footing and to launch into Ohio and the rest of the Super Tuesday states.
How do you account for the fact that this native son of Michigan, the son of a former governor, a very popular governor in Michigan, seems to have had such a hard time holding on to his state?
Well, you know, listen, we always knew Michigan was going to be a competitive state. And Michigan, you know, likes and loves a fighter. And Mitt Romney's fought like an underdog and sharpened his positions and really has established himself as the jobs candidate, the paycheck candidate. And Michigan and is one of those states that's starved and hungry, thirsty for jobs and paychecks, and has suffered because of the failure of the Obama presidency of just bringing higher taxes, more spending, and not enough jobs.
But why has this been such a tough contest
connected
for him?
Here.
Why has that been such a tough contest for him in his home state?
Well, you know, he came in, we were behind, and he's the comeback kid, and he's fought very hard, and scrapped for every vote, and you know, that's how you win the contest. And we've seen the results in Arizona, and it looks good here in Michigan. And I like the margin, and we're just waiting for these votes to roll in. And I think we're going to see a great night by Mitt Romney.
You like the margin? If it were to be, say, a 3%, 4% victory, you consider that a good margin?
Hey, a win is a win.
A win is a win. We've heard that many times.
A win is a win.
What do you think about Mitt Romney's position on the auto bailout and whether that hurt him among voters in your state?
Well, you know what? Mitt has explained it, I bet you, maybe 100 or 1,000 times, and it really is just a difference in degree. Do you want a private sector structured bankruptcy or a government-run bankruptcy? And so he explained that, talked about it, and what it did is he was very direct. And the fact that I think people in Michigan, I think people across the country want straight talk, no nonsense, no excuses. Here's where he stood, and he talked about paycheck issues, jobs issues, and frankly, his record of cutting taxes when he was governor of Massachusetts and how he reduced spending, and that's a tonic to people in this state.
Thank you so much for being with us, Attorney General Bill Schuette of Michigan, Mitt Romney's campaign chair in Michigan. And we're going to go now to Rick Santorum headquarters in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Rick Santorum has taken the stage to speak to his supporters.
A month ago, they didn't know who we are, but they do now. What an absolutely great night. I am so thankful to so many people here tonight. First and foremost, I just have to say to the people of Michigan, you know, we came into the backyard of one of my opponents in a race that everyone said, well, just ignore, you have really no chance here. And the people of Michigan looked into the hearts of the candidates, and all I have to say is, I love you back. Thank you. I also, thank you, I also, as I said, you're getting to know me. Thank you. Not necessarily exactly through the mediums that I want you to get to know me, but, you know, we have an opportunity tonight to tell you a little bit more about who Rick Santorum is. I want to thank the folks up here on this stage behind me, my wife Karen and my family, who's represented here by Elizabeth and John, and at home, the rest of the family, Daniel and Sarah Maria and Peter and Patrick and our little Bella. I want to thank them for standing behind me, not just figuratively, but literally every day of this campaign. So thank them very, very much. I want to tell you about some, more specifically about three people. First, someone who's not here that I haven't publicly thanked yet, and I feel like I've been remiss at doing so. And that's someone who I know is watching, too. And that's my 93-year-old mom. I'm sure she's feeling very proud. One of her first jobs was in Saginaw, Michigan. And she was very, very excited that I was coming back here to Michigan. But my mom's in a very, well, unusual person for her time. She's someone who did get a college education in the 1930s and was a nurse. And got a graduate degree even as a nurse and worked full-time. And when she married my dad, they worked together at the Veterans Administration. That's where they met, right after the war. And later on, they had me and the rest of the family, my brother and sister. And my mom continued to work. She worked all of my childhood years. She balanced time, as my dad did, working in different schedules. And she was a very unusual person that time. She was a professional who actually made more money than her husband. I grew up with a very strong mom, someone who was a professional person who taught me a lot of things about how to balancing work and family and doing it well and doing it with a big heart and commitment. You know, that's probably one of the reasons that I ended up marrying the person I married here, Karen. Someone... someone who is as strong as they get. Someone who was, I met when she was just about to start the practice of law, and I was doing the same. I recruited her in more ways than one to my law firm. Karen was a professional, worked for a nurse for 9 years, and then after that, we got married, and she walked away, and she decided to stay home and raise her children, but she didn't quit working, obviously. Raising seven children is a lot of work, but she found time also to be an author of two books. Those books about really went to the heart of the family and something she knows a lot about. She too has been that rock that has been beside me and has been a great example of how it's important to balance that work and family and do so committed to making sure that you're the best at both that you can be. And now I'm proud that I have a daughter here in Elizabeth who is a great part of our campaign. She goes out on her own and campaigns, and the feedback I get is, you stay home, just send Elizabeth out. You'll do just fine. So I've been very, very blessed with great role models for me, as someone who goes out and tries to do the job I'm doing right now, to balance the rigors of running a campaign and trying to maintain a good and strong family. We all have to do that in Americans. We all have that responsibility to make both work and work as well as we can. And it's getting harder out here in America. It's getting harder for people to make ends meet because we have a government that is crushing us every single day with more taxes, more regulations, and the idea that they know better than you how to run your life. That ultimately is about what this race is about. It goes down to the very nature of who we are as Americans. Are we a country that believes in big government? Do we believe in the smart and elite in this country to manage us? Or do you believe in free people and a free economy and building a great America from the bottom up? What do you say?
Rick Santorum addressing his supporters at his campaign headquarters in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Well, we put together a plan and we announced it here in Michigan, our first 100 days and what we're going to do, our freedom agenda, as to how we're going to get this country turned around. And the first thing we talked about is what's on the minds of a lot of people right now, and that is the rising energy costs in this country. We can put millions of Americans, and that's underscoring millions of Americans, back to work if we would unleash the entrepreneurial spirit of our energy sector of the economy. We can drive down prices, decrease our dependency on foreign oil. We can do it all, but we have a president who says no. We have a president who, when the opportunity to open up federal lands for mining and oil and gas drilling, says no. We have a president who's, we have an opportunity to open up offshore, he says no. Deep water, he says no. Alaska, he says no. Build a pipeline, he says no. We need a president who says yes to the American people and energy production. It's not just the consumer that's affected by it, but it's many communities across this country, rural communities that have been struggling. You look at where the population loss is in this country. You look at where the unemployment rate's its highest. It's in areas where the government has shut down and made it virtually impossible for us to use our natural resources, to be able to get to that oil, to get to that coal, to get to that timber, whatever the case may be. Bureaucrats in Washington don't care about flyover country and those sparsely populated areas that provide us the resources upon which we live. I was in one of those areas just a couple weeks ago in the Bakken in northwestern North Dakota. And I went to a little town of Tioga, North Dakota. I'll tell you how small Tioga, North Dakota is. That's about the fifth time I've mentioned the speech and I've yet to get a shout out for Tioga, North Dakota. It's a small town. It's a small town, and it could be a boom town, but they're nervous because the present EPA is hovering. Yes, they're developing oil on private lands. This oil. Yeah, this is oil. Oil out of rock, shale. It leaches oil. In fact, the highest quality oil in the world, light sweet crude. It can produce thousands and thousands of jobs up in northwest North Dakota. But they have trouble. They have trouble getting investors to come here. Why? Because they believe the government is going to shut them down or potentially pull the plug on them. They have a pipeline that they'd love to be able to build to get that oil to market instead of running truck after truck after truck through the roads of North Dakota and then on the rail. This crude that comes out of this rock is a premium product, but not in North Dakota. They get a $32 discount when they sell their oil. Why? Because we have a president who won't let them get their oil to market. Folks, we need a president who's on the side of rural America, who's on the side of small town America, and opens up those energy resources for America.
We're listening to Rick Santorum addressing his supporters in Michigan. NPR now projects Mitt Romney as the winner of the Michigan primary. The Michigan Republican primary is up by about 4 points, 41% to 37%, and over 70% of precincts have reported. We'll listen to more of what Senator Santorum, the runner-up here, has to say.
It's the message of creating jobs, manufacturing jobs for small-town America, resonated here with the people of Michigan. They saw a vision for how their lives could be better. They saw a vision how their ladder to success now could be built down to people with limited skills, but the desire to work hard and be able to upgrade their skills as they work in a manufacturing facility. We've lost from 21% of the economy to 9% of, not of the economy, but of workers in manufacturers down to 9%. That's just inexcusable. All of it because government regulation and government taxation. We've put forward a plan. The Wall Street Journal calls supply-side economics for the working man. The working men and women of this country to be able to get those jobs in manufacturing, to be able to get those skills, provide for their family. The average manufacturing job in America pays $20,000 more a year than the average job in America. We can get those jobs back. We need to slash the corporate rate for taxes to zero. We need to let the regulatory environment, which Barack Obama is destroying and crushing manufacturing. We will repeal every single one of Barack Obama's big government regulations on day one.
We've been listening to Rick Santorum give what is essentially a concession speech in Michigan. He has, NPR projects, come in second in the Michigan primary to Mitt Romney. Ron Elving, bring us up to date.
We have more than 70% of the results in, and for the last 60 percentage points of count, the margin has remained almost unchanged, 41 to 37, 38, a little bit of variation. But the numbers have piled up around the state. There's no one part of the state that hasn't been heard from that could make the difference at this point. With about three-fourths of the vote in, we're calling it for Mitt Romney. But hasten to add that because we don't know who's going to win in each of the congressional districts, it is possible that Rick Santorum could win 6, 7, even 8 of the congressional districts while losing statewide and thereby get slightly more delegates out of Michigan than Mitt Romney.
So
still possible.
Lose the popular vote would be one scenario, but still do okay, maybe even better in the delegate count.
That's
from
right.
Michigan. A little nod, too, at this point. Ron Paul in Michigan, 12%. Newt Gingrich, 7%.
Ron, have we achieved something here in terms of getting into form where the runner-up, which is to say the guy who loses, doesn't exactly concede but makes the speech first, leading the way for Mitt Romney sometime soon will come out and speak second? It's taken them a while to get to that much decorum, I think.
That's right, and it's not been negotiated in any kind of formal way. But obviously, Rick Santorum would like to be able to say at some point that it was a mixed result here, mm-hmm. that he actually came out ahead or tied in delegates, and therefore he's really done as well as he could have hoped to have done in Michigan and try to put a better face on it. He does not seem terribly confident about that prospect, though, because the speech he's been giving here for the last 10, 15 minutes has not sounded like a partial victory speech, but rather as a concession.
He did talk about coming into the backyard of Mitt Romney at the beginning of the speech, coming into the backyard and making a showing there in Mitt Romney's home state.
I'd like to hear from our commentators, E.J. Dionne and Matt Continetti, about that speech. Rick Santorum came out, Matt, and he said, "You don't know me," and he began talking about his mother, the college-educated breadwinner in the household, and his wife, the professional, who walked away from her work. It was not, this was not the man who was saying only snobs want to send all the kids in America to college.
I didn't hear a mention of contraceptives.
No, nor contraceptives either
in that speech. Look, I think when we look at these results, we see Mitt Romney is in the sweet spot of the Republican Party. He has consistently won the somewhat conservatives within the Republican Party, and those are the voters who traditionally have gone on to determine the actual nominee. It's only been in these few cases where the somewhat conservatives go for other candidates. Romney won them in Michigan, and he won them in Arizona, and I think that looks good for him going into Super Tuesday.
EJ, what do you make of Michigan?
Well, I think Rick Santorum's speech tonight, with all that reference to college education and working women, is the longest apology to working women and college graduates in the history of American political campaigns, partly because no candidate ever had to apologize to college graduates and working women before. It was really extraordinary, and it suggested he knows he has a problem in this area which he needs to solve if he's going to win future primaries. I think Ron was exactly right when he said earlier this is a big missed opportunity for Santorum. It's not a great victory for Romney. It shows Romney's weaknesses, but Santorum was ahead of Romney at one point. He came very close to beating him here, and so I think he lost an opportunity. One quick point, the class line is once again drawn across a primary state. Again, Mitt Romney's strongest group, his base, those earning over $200,000 a year. Voters earning over 100,000 voted for Romney, under 100,000 voted for Santorum. But Santorum's margin among the less well-off was smaller, and that's why Romney appears to have won.
But look, if someone had told us all a couple of months ago, I mean, back around Iowa, it's going to be neck and neck between Santorum and Romney down to the day of the Michigan primary, I think we all would have raised our eyebrows quite a bit. Matt, does Santorum, is he likely to get anything for this? Is he likely to get more money so that he can keep campaigning and not be outspent 10 to 1 in Ohio, let's say?
Well, I think he'll have continued support to his super PAC by well-heeled donors, and that will get him through Super Tuesday. And maybe he'll surprise us like he did a few weeks ago with Colorado and Missouri, with some states in Super Tuesday where he picks up delegates and makes it something of a two-man race. Well, you know, it's not that surprising on one level, because 4 years ago we had the same split between kind of the establishment elite choice, John McCain, and then the more social conservative populist insurgent, Mike Huckabee. That seems to be the fault line in the Republican Party 4 years ago, right now, and probably well on into the future.
I think Rick Santorum does have a base in Michigan. I looked at the CNN website for the exit polls. About 40% of the voters today in Michigan were white evangelicals. They went strongly for Santorum. People who said the religious beliefs of candidates matter a great deal for them went overwhelmingly for Santorum. Now, religious voters are not enough to win a primary all by themselves, but they could give him a base in state after state.
Is that a positive statement about Santorum, or do we see any resistance still to Romney because he's a Mormon?
I have been struck by that question on the exit poll with the people who where the religious beliefs of their candidates really matters. Romney has done very badly in that group quite consistently. I think some of it reflects the importance of evangelicals for Santorum, but I do think there is a strain of anti-Mormon voting in these primaries.
E.J. Dionne, Matt Continetti, thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
And we're going to go quickly now to NPR's Ari Shapiro, who's at Mitt Romney headquarters in Novi. Ari, you're there with some voters, is that right?
Yes, I've just been out talking to a couple of voters before I came back here to the microphone, and I got two different attitudes. One was, oh yeah, I always knew he would win. I was never afraid. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And then this other woman just elated said, all day I was afraid it was a toss-up. And then with a big grin, she said, it's not a toss-up anymore.
So some happiness there, although they're still waiting to hear from their candidate.
Yep.
And what are you hearing about when Mitt Romney might be coming out to speak? Rick Santorum is still speaking in
Grand
Rapids.
Right, I think he doesn't want to step on Rick Santorum, but as soon as Santorum's done, I think he's ready to come out and claim his home state as a victory.
Are you hearing from inside the campaign, Ari, some rethinking of what they did and how narrowly they were able to eke this out in Mitt Romney's home state?
Well, they will say, as they said after they believed that Romney had won Iowa by a handful of votes, their slogan is going to be a win's a win. But the fact is they had to fight so hard for this win, much harder than they ever expected to in his home state. The flip side of that is that it has turned Romney from sort of the inevitable candidate, the inevitable nominee, into the fighter. Now, some people say he fought dirty, but he's been fighting hard and at least here, it looks like he's won.
Okay, NPR's Ari Shapiro at Mitt Romney headquarters in Novi, Michigan, where they're waiting for the candidate to come and give what is his victory speech. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. From NPR News, this is live coverage of the Michigan and Arizona primaries. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Mitt Romney comes out on top in both states.
He easily won Arizona, and after a close race in Michigan, the home state candidate was able to pull ahead of Rick Santorum.
Coming up, reaction and analysis.
It's special coverage of the Michigan and Arizona primaries from NPR News. And we're joined here in the studio by NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. And Ron, let's look at these results coming out of Michigan. We're waiting for Mitt Romney to speak to his supporters in Novi. How many times have we heard it tonight? A win's a win. But clearly, they would have wanted a bigger margin in his home state.
That's right. But in recent days, as we have seen Rick Santorum surge out of those February 7th trifecta primaries that he won, primaries and caucuses, small voting events, no delegates committed, but an entire political conversation transformed. The entire political establishment was waiting with its breath held tonight to see if Rick Santorum could bring it off. Knock off Mitt Romney in Michigan, and you have knocked off Mitt Romney. He would probably have cycled downward from there. It was easy to see the scenario by which he had blown the nomination if he lost tonight, but he didn't.
Didn't do it. And what are we looking at now, about a 4 percentage point margin?
It's about 30,000 votes. It's between 3 and 4 percentage points. It's been bouncing around there since very early in the evening. It's been an extraordinarily consistent count all night long. Since we reached about 12-13% of the vote, it has barely changed.
Ann Romney is now introducing her husband in Novi, Michigan. They're there with at least one of their sons to address their supporters. Robert?
And Paris, Don Gagne is at Santorum headquarters. Senator Santorum left the podium a while ago, paving the way for Governor Romney to speak. How did the crowd receive that talk by Senator Santorum, Don?
It was very quiet. They came here anticipating a really big, exciting night with lots to celebrate. And you could see it in the candidate's kind of tone and his demeanor. It was the most low-key speech we've seen him give in 3 weeks here in Michigan. And you could kind of feel the crowd. They listened to him. They love him. Mm-hmm. They cheered. It segued into a kind of a normal stump speech. But it got very subdued despite the very majestic music they were playing very loud over the speakers.
Don, we heard, I think, more than 10 minutes of his speech, but we didn't hear it right to the end. Did he acknowledge the good showing that Governor Romney made here? Did he say something about his rival? No.
No, he talked about coming into his backyard here and fighting the fight and that the world now knows who he is and who they are and who the campaign is. But we're told that he had already called Governor Romney before he came out to speak, but he did not make
what
would be kind of a formal concession. No.
Do you assume that next week, that the big event on Super Tuesday for Senator Santorum will be Ohio?
And he leads in the polls there now, but it'll be interesting to see what impact this has on the statewide polls. Certainly it is a place where they will say, well, Mitt Romney doesn't have the home court advantage that he had in Michigan. He doesn't have those long-time historic family ties to the state. And the automobile question will play out there as well, because there are also a lot of
auto jobs in Ohio, yeah.
But there are also these huge swaths of rural areas in Ohio, lots of Tea Party voters and lots of evangelical voters. So they're happy to have the reset in Ohio, but I think it really will be the battleground between these two.
Well, Don, enjoy Ohio. As you say goodbye to Michigan, it's NPR's Don.
I won't be there till tomorrow morning.
Okay. Don Gagne at Santorum headquarters in Grand Rapids.
And going back now to Ron Elving as we await the speech from Mitt Romney there in Michigan. And, Ron, I'm curious. Michigan, the state we're focusing on right now, I believe has voted Democratic in every presidential election since 1992. Any reason to think that would be any different in 2012?
Not according to the current polls. The current polls show that Barack Obama has been benefiting from the comeback of the auto industry, which is certainly the big headline in Michigan, a state that had one of the worst unemployment rates in the country, now is one of the more recovering states around the country. And that's certainly been reflected in what we've seen in this particular contest as well.
Okay, Ron, thanks so much. That's NPR's Ron Elving. And we're going now to Mitt Romney's speech in Novi, Michigan, to his supporters as he claims victory in the Michigan primary. Let's listen
in. First, thank you was the first state to call it. Thank you, Arizona. Great victory in Arizona tonight. And thank you, Michigan. What a win. This is a big night. Thanks, you guys. You know, a week ago, it was just a week ago, the pundits and the pollsters, they were ready to count us out. But across Michigan and Arizona, I kept on meeting moms and dads and students and grandparents, and they were concerned about what's happening to this great country of ours. And I was confident that we could come together today and take a giant step toward a brighter future. So tonight, their efforts have brought our cause a great victory, and we celebrate with people across these states. Thank you. Now, tonight is also particularly special for me because this is the place where I was born. This is the place where I was raised. My mom and dad lived many years here and loved this great state. And I know that the Michiganders in this room, we consider you all family. Thank you so much for your help. And in this room are the people who knocked on the doors and made the calls and went to the polls, and it made an enormous difference. We didn't win by a lot, but we won by enough, and that's all that counts. And by the way, in Arizona, special thank you to Governor Jan Brewer there and Senator John McCain. They were tireless, particularly John McCain. He's been all over the country helping. What a hero. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Governor. They're out there. We've got two sons out there that are celebrating with them. Great thing about having so many in our family. We can cover almost every race. So Super Tuesday will be stretched, but we're going to find a way. Our campaign, as you know, is about restoring the promise of America. Last week, I unveiled a very bold economic plan that's going to jumpstart the economy, and it's going to get Michiganders back to work. It's going to get Americans more jobs they're crying out for, and we're going to have less debt and smaller government, and I'm going to deliver on more jobs, less debt, and smaller government. We've got to hear that day in and day out. More jobs, less debt, smaller government. You know, There are a lot of people who are saying that if you're running for office, you really can't speak honestly to the American people. Well, we did, and I will. And because this is a decisive moment, I believe this is a time that requires real leadership in our country. Our times are tough. We need leaders who will live with integrity, who have the courage to tell the truth, and have the experience to get our economy back on track. That's the kind of leader I aspire to be. That's the kind of leader I will be if I'm president of the United States. Our campaign is about more than just replacing a president. It's about restoring America's promise. From generation to generation, Americans have always known that the future would be brighter and better. Americans have always believed in a tomorrow full of possibility and prosperity. That's what it means to be the land of opportunity. In America, you know that if you work hard, you can build a better life. If you teach your kids the right kind of values and help them make the right choices in life, you know their future will be prosperous and secure. And that deep confidence of a better tomorrow is the basic promise of America. Today, that promise is being threatened by a faltering economy and a failed presidency. 4 years ago, we warned that the presidency was no place for on-the-job training. Well, today we have the economy to prove it, all right? This president, by the way, he likes to remind us that he inherited an economy that was in crisis. But he doesn't like to remind us that he also inherited a Democrat Congress. He had majorities in both the House and the Senate. He was free to pursue any policy he pleased. Did he fix the economy? No. You know, did he tackle the housing crisis?
No.
Did he get America back to work?
No.
No, instead he put us on a path toward debt and deficits and decline. It's time to get off that path and get back on the path of American prosperity. Now, these days when he's not spending our money or infringing on our rights, he's busy running for re-election. He believes that, did you hear this? He believes that he ranks among the top four presidents in American history. Can you believe that? I'd find a different spot for him. He thinks he deserves a second term. He says, we can't wait, to which I say, oh, yes, we can. All right? Today, we're $15 trillion in debt, and real unemployment stands at 15%. You've heard that old saying about I need a vacation for my vacation. Well, we need to have a recovery from this so-called recovery. You know, as a nation, we've survived a Great Depression. We've weathered two world wars. We've made it through tough times. And we've not come all this way to give up now. We still believe in the hope, in the dream, and the promise of America. We know our future is better and brighter in these troubled times. That unwavering conviction guides our campaign and this effort. It's rallied millions of people to our cause, and it's the message we're going to take to every corner of the country from Ohio and Idaho to Georgia and Tennessee. We've seen enough of this president over the last 3 years to know that we don't need another 5 years of President Obama, because he thinks he's unchecked by the Constitution. He's unresponsive to the will of our people, and in a second term, he would be unrestrained by the demands of re-election. If there's one thing we can't afford, it's 4 years of Barack Obama with nothing to answer to. So we're going to get him out of that office and get him back home where he belongs.
We're listening to Mitt Romney address his supporters in Novi, Michigan. Again, NPR has projected that Mitt Romney is the victor in his home state by about 3 percentage points over Rick Santorum, also the winner today in the Arizona primary. We'll go back now to Mitt Romney.
You saw his budget. You saw the budget he put it out. It foreshadows exactly what we're going to see ahead if he's the president. Runaway spending, record debt, they were just the warm-up act. You know, for an encore, he wants to raise taxes on job creators and small businesses and families. And we are not going to let him do it. In this campaign, I'm offering a real choice and a very different direction. I have a plan that will restore America's promise through more jobs and less debt and smaller government. President Obama is making the federal government bigger, more burdensome, and bloated. I'll make it simpler, smaller, and smarter, and it's about time for that to happen. He raised the national debt. I will cut, cap, and balance the budget. He passed Obamacare. I will repeal Obamacare. He lost our AAA credit rating. I'll restore our AAA credit rating. He rejected the Keystone Pipeline. I'll get us that oil from Canada that we deserve. And by the way, I'm going to open up our lands for development so we can finally get the energy in this country that we need at a price we can afford. Look, when it comes to the economy, my highest priority will be worrying about your job, not worrying about how to save my own. This president wants to raise your taxes. I'm going to cut them. That's going to start with an across-the-board 20% rate cut for every American. I'll also repeal the alternative minimum tax, and we will abolish, finally, the death tax. And he has now proposed raising taxes on small businesses and job creators. I'm gonna lower those taxes. I'll also lower the corporate rate to larger businesses to 25%. I'll make the R&D tax credit permanent to foster innovation. And I'm going to end the repatriation tax to return investment back to our shores. There's a lot of money offshore that ought to come back to America. Let's finally have a tax plan that puts Americans back to work. And I have it, and we'll get it in place. Now, you know he also proposes to raise taxes on savings and investment. And if I'm the president, I'm going to help middle-class families save and invest tax-free. Yeah, good. I agree. You agree. It's about time. And he also has an extraordinary gap in his policy proposals. Do you realize after saying that Medicare and Social Security were in trouble, he has yet to offer a single serious proposal for saving Medicare and Social Security? I have a plan to save them both. And unlike him, I have the courage to put my plan on the table for people to see. Look, what this campaign is about, what my plans are about, are creating jobs and raising wages for the American people. They're going to strengthen our entitlement programs for the next generation. And they will not add to our deficit. We will finally balance America's budget. Now, beyond having a plan to get our citizens back to work, I have the experience to get our economy back on track. I spent 25 years in business. I was also the steward of the Olympics and the leader of a state. I cut taxes 19 times. I've turned a budget shortfall into a surplus. I know how government can kill jobs, and yes, I know how it can help create jobs. And I stand ready to lead our party to victory and our nation back to prosperity. We'll get the job done. This is a critical time in America. It's our time for choosing. And this time, we got to get the choice right. I've said it before, and I firmly believe it, that this campaign is about saving the soul of America. This election comes down to two very different visions of America. It's a choice between becoming a nation of and by Washington or remaining a nation of and by a free people. A choice between an entitlement society and a land of opportunity. A choice between squandering America's promise and restoring that promise for future generations. If you want to make this election about restoring American greatness, then I hope you'll join us. If you believe the disappointments of the last few years are a detour and not the destiny for America, then I need your support. I'm asking for you to get out and vote. And I'm asking for you, by the way, to go on MittRomney.com and pledge your support in every way possible. I'm asking you to join the fight for our freedom, to ensure that tomorrow will be better than today. This election, let's restore America's promise. Let's fight for this country we love. We've got work ahead. We're going to do that work. We're going to take back America. America's the greatest nation in the history of the earth. We're going to keep it that way. Thanks, you guys. You're the best. God bless you.
Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, the winner in Michigan. He was addressing his supporters in Novi, Michigan. There he also won the Arizona Republican primary in both contests. Former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum ran second. In Arizona, it was a runaway. In Michigan, it was quite close.
Quite close. Mitt Romney there, Robert, saying, "We didn't win by a lot, but we won by enough. That's all that counts." The theme of the night, a win is a win, and he's taking two of them tonight towards Super Tuesday.
And much of the time in that speech was devoted to Romney on the economy. That remains, of course, the main concern of primary voters, and it remains, he believes, his strongest argument.
You're listening to special coverage of the Michigan and Arizona primaries from NPR News. From NPR News, this is special coverage of the Michigan and Arizona Republican primaries. I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Robert Siegel. A final review of tonight's results. NPR has projected Mitt Romney the winner in both Arizona and Michigan. Rick Santorum has come in second in both states.
While the race in Michigan was tight, about a 3% margin, Romney won a decisive victory in Arizona. As for Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich, they trail far behind in both states.
Michael Dimmick of Pew Research has been poring over the exit poll results from Michigan. Do they tell us anything surprising, Michael?
Nothing too surprising. I think the basic dynamics of the race we saw in the races we saw today fit with what we've seen in previous states in terms of ideology and party, where the strengths are. You see beyond just ideology that Romney continues to do well among higher income and higher education voters, struggling among the lower income and lower education, although that vote has gone to Gingrich in some states, here to Santorum a little bit more. One of the questions that came up on this poll, though, was whether these folks are going to follow up and vote Republican in the fall. And you see most of them saying yes. And I think that fits with what the national polling has shown. There's not a lot of sense that while this is bruising perhaps right now, that many of these voters are saying they'll back away if their candidate doesn't get through.
Are you getting a sense from the exit polls, Michael, that they're satisfied with their choices? That's often a question of the enthusiasm they feel for the candidates.
You're right. That's the opposite question. It's not that the question isn't that they're going to go over to Obama. That's not going to happen. The question is, are they going to follow up and show up and really be engaged and enthusiastic? And we've seen in the national polls a decline in that kind of upbeat assessment of these candidates. You know, the Republicans held a substantial engagement advantage coming into this election cycle. One of the things we're all really going to be tracking at the national level over the spring is whether that's going to hold up after this primary.
We should state the obvious here, I guess, which is if you want to do well in a primary, you should campaign and you should be in the state and you should advertise and the like. And we're not talking much about Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul because they really didn't contest Michigan. And Arizona, after the lead was foreseen early on, really wasn't much of a contest either. Even Rick Santorum didn't campaign very heavily there, although there was a debate. But these things obviously work to be there and to advertise.
Right. And we're going into some states, not just on Super Tuesday, but following, that are going to be more southern states. Mm-hmm. They're going to have higher white evangelical populations. They're going to be a little more conservative in some ways. So we know, as we've observed the states so far, those factors matter a lot in how well the candidates are going to do. So it's hard to predict from one state to the next.
Okay. Michael Dimmick, thanks so much. Michael Dimmick with the Pew Research Center. And let's end this hour by bringing back Ron Elving, our senior Washington editor, also Ted Robbins at Romney headquarters in Arizona, and Ari Shapiro at Romney headquarters in Novi, Michigan. Ron, your thoughts as you listen to Mitt Romney's speech. What a win, he says, in his home state of Michigan, about a 3% margin of victory there.
Not that great a margin, not the sort of thing you'd want to write home about, so to speak. And I was struck by the introduction to his speech as much as by the speech. It was given by Ann Romney, his wife. She went on for a little longer than she usually does when she introduces him. It seemed that there was a good deal of emphasis on the fact that he basically won this primary on his superior appeal to women voters in the Republican Party in Michigan. They were about tied among men. I believe Romney had a small margin among men. But it would have been a terribly different story if the women's vote had gone the other way. And clearly, Rick Santorum had that on his mind, too, with some of the things that he talked about, his wife's working life, his mother's working life, trying to show that he was not against women working outside the home, not against the modern family arrangement of the United States that he seems to have been against in many of his remarks in recent days and weeks. So we saw the force of women, the power of women, in this result tonight in Michigan.
Ari Shapiro, any surprises you heard in Mitt Romney's speech? Any deviations from his standard stump speech?
The only surprise was that he didn't even mention Rick Santorum. An aide came over just before Romney began speaking and let me know that he had called Rick Santorum and spoken to him just before the speech. But it was back on the track that he has tried to stay on from the beginning of this, which is attacking solely President Obama. He's been steered off that track again and again and again by challengers, whether it's Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich. Now he's back on the track for the moment, but we'll see what happens tomorrow.
And Ted Robbins in Arizona, what's the mood there?
Well, it's 9 o'clock here, and they're rolling up the sidewalk.
It's over. It's over.
Well, they heard, they just all, everybody listened to Governor Romney's speech on the big screen, cheered right along with the folks in Michigan, and as soon as it was off, people started to leave. And I to be fair, a fair number of people who with young babes in arms who needed to get home to put them into their beds.
I'd like to ask Ari Shapiro a question about the Romney camp and what you've heard today. Do they seem to feel that from here on in, it's okay? They survived Michigan and they have an advantage in money, and so they can skate to Tampa from here, or are they worried about Ohio?
Well, look, it's all relative. They were hoping to skate to Tampa from Iowa, and they didn't. And so they dodged a bullet in Michigan, but it's not the last bullet, as evidence that Romney is prepared for what may be a longer fight than his campaign had ever anticipated. This was the first victory night speech where he ever openly solicited financial contributions from his supporters. So, you know, they're still confident that he's going to be the nominee, but how you get there might be a bit more of a circuitous path than they would like.
And Ron Elving, when you think about the money, Rick Santorum, enough to keep going. What about Newt Gingrich? He just got another infusion from his donor in Nevada.
One of the things that's different about 2012 is the role of the super PAC, as we've been calling it, which enables a few donors, even in some cases one or two, to completely bankroll somebody going on and on in the primaries, whereas normally their source of support might have dried up by now.
Ted Robbins in Arizona, was it wall-to-wall Romney and Santorum ads on television over the past week or so?
No, not at all. I think the most watched event and possibly the highlight of the event of the campaign here was the debate that was held in Mesa. No, the mm-hmm. spending was not what I would call lavish, though Romney, Santorum, and Paul had all had ads on the air. I should add, you know, I just talked to the Arizona Secretary of State, and he said that 60, almost two-thirds of the votes, 60%, were placed early by mail. So the last couple of weeks, you know, the last couple of days, rather, may not have made as much of a difference, actually. The votes may have been cast long ago.
And that's very much a Western states trend, very similar
yeah, and
in Colorado as well.
And that's right. And in this case, I think it probably helped Governor Romney because it was before Senator Santorum made his surge.
Okay. Ted Robbins, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
And Ari, thinking ahead to Super Tuesday, some 11, 12, I can't remember how many states voting, Georgia, Ohio.
10,
okay. Yeah. including at least one state where Newt Gingrich isn't on the ballot. I don't know if Rick Santorum,
Virginia,
I think, isn't on
right.
the ballot in Virginia.
Yeah, just Ron Paul and Mitt Romney in Virginia.
So the strategy headed forward and thinking about where the delegates are?
Well, you got to focus on the states where you think you're going to do well. And for Romney, that does not include the southern states like Tennessee and Georgia. So he's going to be focusing on places like Ohio, like Virginia, North Dakota, Washington State, some of those places that tend to be a little more moderate, a little less evangelical, less socially conservative.
But that's still a week away. For now, everyone should have a super Tuesday night and a super Wednesday. I'm Robert Siegel.
I'm Melissa Block. You've been listening to special coverage from NPR News.